You are listening to the City Dogs podcast with your host, Kimberly Freeman from City Dog Expert.
Hello, wonderful people. I'm back. So I'm sorry. I've been a terrible podcaster. I was doing really well. I had great momentum, motivation. I had some fantabulous guests. And then I just kind of lost my mojo a little bit. And, you know, life just happened and the podcast was kind of put on the back seat a lot. And I'm so sorry because this is something I really, really enjoyed doing. And I like getting this content out for you. And I love talking to the guests. And it's something that is very important to me. And I let it slip. And once I let it slip, it just got worse and worse and worse. And I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. However, good news. The podcast is back. Yes. Welcome to the original City Dogs podcast. And I just want to thank you so much for tuning in. We have a lovely reboot. We have some spectacular guests for the next season. I'm doing seasons now. That's what I'm going to use as my excuse for taking such a long break from podcasting. So this season, we have some spectacular guests. And this particular episode that you're listening to, I think is very, very special. It's something that's very important to me about rescuing dogs, rescuing sight hounds, and the stereotypes we have about the particular breeds, and also why they make great city dogs. So without further ado, welcome back to the City Dogs podcast. And here is your first episode of season two of City Dogs. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a really exciting episode of City Dogs. And today we have a very, very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I would. My name is Tracy Parbury. I'm chair of Greyhound Trust Hall Green, which is a branch of the main charity, which is the Greyhound Trust.
Now, greyhounds. I am a big fan of greyhounds. Tracy's just smiling away there. As most of you know, I have a Saluki rescue chaplain who is part of the same family, sighthounds, as greyhounds. I've always wanted greyhounds my entire life, mostly because they're so lazy, which suits my lifestyle perfectly. So what got you into the breed?
Basically, we wanted a dog that would suit our lifestyle mm-hmm. as well. At the time, my husband and I lived next door to my mum.
Okay.
And she was disabled. And we wanted a dog that she would be able to participate in, look after for us when we were at work, and give her some focus. And the dog that we felt was going to be the best dog was the greyhound, simply because of its nature, of its kindness, the fact that it didn't need to have a great deal of exercise, so we weren't putting a lot of pressure on my mum to worry about that side of it. So we went to Hall Green Greyhound Trust, mm-hmm. and it was called Hall Green Retired Greyhound Trust at the time. We went with the vision of going for one greyhound, and we ended up with two.
Oh my gosh.
And believe it or not, we've now got three.
Oh my gosh. Okay, this sounds like my life, living with five dogs.
Well, we've got three. We've got three greyhounds at the moment.
Space for two more.
Big thing that comes across, and one of our favourite sayings is, if there's room on the floor, there's room for one more.
I love this.
Absolutely.
My Pomeranian theory is, if I can still hold one more, there's space. So any rescue poms out there, there's room here, definitely. So you rescued these greyhounds.
We did.
Took them home. And what was that like, transition-wise?
To be quite honest, we were really surprised how quickly they adapted.
Right.
I mean, from our perspective, we recognise that they're dogs first. So, you know, training comes into it. You can't just take these dogs from a racing background that have lived in kennels, put them into a home and go, you know, get on with it.
Absolutely.
So from our point of view, it was a case of training them, of giving them expectations mm-hmm. of what we want from them, and then training them to do that. But we were nicely surprised that I would say in about 3 days they'd got it. They knew what we wanted. For instance, we walked them around the house when we got them.
Yeah.
We showed them outside. We used the command be clean.
Nice.
And every half an hour back out around the house. You know, this is your kennel.
Yeah.
This is where you want to go to the toilet. And okay, yeah, we had a couple of accidents. But, you know, if you're going to be a dog lover mm-hmm. and you're going to home a dog, you've got to be prepared to put up with it.
Absolutely.
While the training is going ahead. But it didn't take them very long.
And, you know, my theory is as well, is a lot of people assume that new rescue dogs are going to be badly behaved or not toilet trained, and they're not willing to put that work in, yet they will go online and buy a puppy. And yeah. you have to put even more work in
Absolutely.
With a small puppy because you've got all the damage control to deal yeah. with as well.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's an excuse not to rescue, that you're not prepared to do toilet training with a rescue dog, because it's usually easier.
To be honest, if you're not prepared with any pet,
yeah.
if you're not prepared to put the time in, if you're going to home it, then you shouldn't really look or consider taking on a pet, whether it be a cat, a dog, whatever. Because, you know, at the end of the day, there's work to be done with any animal that yes. you take in. It's not, you know, you can't have a child and then go, do you know what, I don't want to do potty training, so I'm going to get rid of it. You know, at the end of the day, it comes with the baggage.
It's like any relationship, even dating someone, you have yeah. to kind of assess things and see how things are going and developing and
yeah.
understanding that person as a person. And it's exactly the same with rescuing a dog
totally.
or getting any kind of dog, really. You have to understand that dog's needs and provide for them as best you can.
You do. I mean, I'm a big advocate in certainly what we do with Greyhound Trust Hall Green. We ask people to become volunteers for a while. So if they're interested in taking on a greyhound, especially yeah. if they've never had a dog before, we say to them, come along, come and volunteer with us. Come and get to know the breed.
Mm-hmm.
If they stay with us a bit longer, they're allowed to actually, we do a home visit. So okay. we check the environment that the dog eventually will be going into, give them some ideas of what their expectations are against the dogs.
Yes.
And then we say to them, you know, once you've been with us a while, you can take the dog home for a couple of hours. Now, that isn't a negative against the dog. It's actually getting that dog into an environment and teaching it different environments.
Absolutely.
So it's actually training the dog while we're assessing whether they, you know, want a greyhound or not.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, they can see whether a greyhound fits in their home. We've had people who've said, my goodness, I didn't realise a greyhound was so big. Now, we've got big greyhounds and small greyhounds.
Yes.
But just seeing them in that environment makes a difference.
Absolutely.
And then they can assess whether this is right for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if necessary, we'll go down a trial route. So they sign all the adoption papers, but we give them a week's trial.
Yep.
In that way, they understand owning a dog. They understand the situation of, you know, you have to move the bin. The dog will go for the bin. You know.
Or what I found with my Saluki is don't leave anything on the counters.
Absolutely.
I've gone from having all these small dogs, and previous to that I had retrievers, but
yeah.
they were at that level of training whereby they wouldn't touch anything on the counters. But Chaplin, first night, he's like, oh, there's a whole bunch of donuts here. I'm just going to eat 12 donuts overnight. And I woke up the next morning and I thought I'd gone mad because the box was perfectly intact and he'd taken each one out. And I only noticed on the camera afterwards, he'd taken each one out and had a little nibble. He's like, oh, this is good. I might try another one. And then kept on doing that to this whole big box of donuts. And then he left one of them, which he'd just licked all the sugar off. He's like, I'm going to leave that for Mum. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Wow, thanks, Chaplin. And that's the only way I knew that he'd done it.
It is. I mean, surface, what is it? They counter surfing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we say to people, you know, don't leave your breakfast on the table and walk out to work. It's not going to be there when you get back.
No way.
You know, my perception, and certainly my husband's perception is that, you know, there are guidelines that you have to set up.
Yep.
Our three greyhounds actually lie on the edge of our carpet where the kitchen joins
mm-hmm.
the hall.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they can lie there and look up expectantly that they're going to get something, which they will if they're good. But they're not allowed into the kitchen while we're cooking.
Right.
And we don't feed them in the kitchen. So their expectations are they can come in to go through into the garden.
Yeah.
But there are no-go areas and there are go areas. Another thing that I'm a big advocate of with regards to training, especially when you've got children, is if you're going to have a dog, and this is any dog, you know, if you want to allow them on the settee, then put something on the settee that they recognise, for instance, a cover.
Mm-hmm.
They get used to when the cover is on the settee, they can sit on it. When it's on the floor, they sit on the floor. Because a lot of accidents and a lot of problems with dogs, especially the greyhound side, is they sleep with their eyes open. So a lot of children will think that the dog is awake,
yeah,
when actually it's fast asleep and it's dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go to pull the dog, or they'll go to touch the mm-hmm. dog, and there'll be this growl or this movement. And that's immediately it's blamed on the dog. It's,
yep,
it's not the dog's fault.
Yeah.
So my attitude is, especially with youngsters, is if you have a situation where you know the children are at home or you've got visitors coming, put the dog on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't allow it to go on the settee. But when it's free and it's mm-hmm. easy, put the cover back on, and the dog knows it can go on.
So in city spaces, obviously, because we don't have as much space.
Absolutely.
You know, I very much try and teach people, if your dog wants to go on the sofa, that's absolutely fine, but under your rules.
Absolutely.
For example, with small dogs, I don't encourage them to jump on and off the sofa because they can hurt themselves quite badly. Chaplin is the only one that, you know, he just does what he wants, basically. But he understands, because my apartment is very small, probably about half or a quarter of a house anywhere outside of London. He understands that, yeah, you can go in the kitchen, that's fine, but you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to go near the oven when I'm cooking, that kind of thing. Having those rules is very sensible. And also in reference to the sofa, I use so many sofa covers because I don't have the luxury my parents have of having an extra a room where the dogs can chill out and they can lay back,
yeah,
and it gets covered in mud. My living room is the only space,
absolutely,
I have to entertain,
yeah,
people, although we're in my spare bedroom now.
Very nice spare bedroom, isn't it?
But you know, I have to teach them that you can only come up on the cream sofa if this blanket's down, because otherwise people come in my apartment and are like, oh, this is a bit dirty, isn't it? And I'm like, I've got dogs. But they understand when the throw is down, they can go on there, they can do what they want. If I move the throw to somewhere else, or
yeah,
if I'm traveling, I'm going to a friend's house, I don't want my dogs to assume that they can jump on someone's sofa, because not everyone is as dog friendly as us, you know.
No, that's right.
And if my dogs understand you can come up when this is on here, that's fantastic, or I can put the throw in the hotel and the,
yeah,
dogs feel comfortable, you know, that kind of thing. It really helps them as well as us.
It's a bit like home from home, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, it's something that if you've got them, their blanket with you, you can put it anywhere and
mm-hmm.
they feel comfortable. They also,
yep,
know it's your smell, their smell,
yep,
which works well for me. I mean, inner cities, I truly believe that the greyhound, as well as sighthounds, certain breeds anyway,
yeah,
are fantastic.
Which is what we're going to talk,
absolutely,
about now. And that's why you're here. Well, one of the reasons why you're here is we are going to big up greyhounds.
Oh.
Because I'm a huge fan of pretty much all the dogs in the sighthound family. This is what you do. You know, this is your job, really, you know, promoting,
yeah,
how amazing greyhounds are. Because so many people have these stereotypes about a lot of sighthounds, greyhounds in particular, that they are really big, but I find that they're like origami. They fold down into the size of a Pomeranian, basically. They curl up so tight. But also people assume they need lots of exercise, that they're very barky. Tell me a little bit about what they're really like.
Well, you're interesting you saying that. We're actually at the National Pet Show in Birmingham over the weekend. It's this Saturday and Sunday. And one of the things that we have is a stand there,
mm-hmm.
Which hopefully will be enable us to introduce the breed to the visitors. We're also doing a parade at the show, and we're also on the animal barn. So we're,
wow,
actually going to be talking about the breed itself. So that will be a wonderful event. The reason why we want to do this and the reason why we use this is because of so many misinterpretations,
mm-hmm,
about the breed. The greyhound is the second fastest mammal in the planet.
Oh,
you,
wow,
know, it is 6 strides and it's up to like 40 miles per hour.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's built for speed. It's,
yeah,
got the same skeletal system as a cheetah. So immediately when you're talking to people, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, oh, I bet they need a lot of,
mm-hmm,
walking. But it's not that case. They're sort of the sprinter of the dog world. And like any athlete, if they're not going to be doing long distances, then it's short distances. It's training up in that area. So the greyhound loves to walk, but,
mm-hmm,
it doesn't need something like a spaniel or a working dog or a collie, where they are constantly having to need to get rid of that energy. The energy is short and fast. In fact, you know, we have people who hire fields out for half an hour,
mm-hmm,
to take their dog for a run.
Yep.
This is a greyhound. They use 5 minutes on it.
So sounds about right.
Warm the dog up, walk it round a couple of minutes, let it off the lead. It runs around for about 5 minutes. It's absolutely shattered.
Yep.
And the next 25 minutes is spent trying to get the dog to actually move.
Move again, yes.
Yeah. So you know, it's a big thing with regards to that, that they work with all ages.
Yes.
They work with families, they work with singles, they work with couples. The nice thing about the greyhound for me is they also work with the elderly, because a lot of rescue centres are very concerned about homing to more elderly people. We don't, or certainly from a branch point of view, we don't say to anybody that they can't have a dog. Mm-hmm. We do believe that there, you know, there is a dog for everyone out there, providing the support is there.
Correct.
So, you know, we've recently homed two greyhounds to a lady and a gentleman who are over in their 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But they have fields.
Yeah.
They have, you know, secure areas. They're dog lovers.
Yeah.
Why not?
Absolutely.
Why not allow these dogs to go home? We've done a home visit with them. We've gone through it. And these dogs don't need specific requirements like other working dogs do, where they've got to be constantly out there. And, you know, it makes their lives, and they're therapy.
Mm-hmm.
They are a therapy.
They really are. And, you know, having dogs has changed my entire life. It changed my career. But it changes my mental state of mind. If I've had a bad day out and about, I just come home and be with my dogs, and it's everything to me. And just going back to what you were just saying about how lazy they're prone to being, I will take all five of mine to the dog park and the poms will run around like maniacs. They're like, oh my gosh, we've never been outside, this is crazy. Chaplin will run around for maybe 5 to 10 minutes and then he will stand by the gate and cry to go home. And the others will just be like, no, we need more time. And whenever I take him somewhere, there's always that stereotype, oh, I bet he needs a lot of exercise. I'm like, no, so lazy, ridiculously lazy. And I find that a lot with greyhounds as well, you know, that a lot of people assume that they need all this exercise and they don't work for the city, whereas I would very much promote them as good city dogs, because they do only need that short window of exercise each day and they just love being with you.
They do. I mean, you know, they're very personable dogs. What I would say, and I know from your own perspective, you know, taking on a dog, whether it be a greyhound or not, is a responsibility.
Absolutely.
And you have to look at what you can give that dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to be out at work for 10 hours a day, then, you know, is that the right thing for the dog? Personally, I would say no. If you're going to have a dog, be it a greyhound or not, then you've got to say, how long is that dog going to be left on its own? What are we going to do to enable that dog to use its brain? Because they do have brains.
They do. And so many city dogs especially get very bored because they're not getting that mental stimulation. But I know a lot of people that do the 10-hour days they can bring their dog to work with them, or they get a bit of flexi time, or them and their partner have like worked things out where one leaves early, one comes back early, that kind of thing. Or they have dog walkers, which there's a lot of greyhounds in this area that go out 2 or 3 times a day because the owner sadly does have to work for those long hours.
Yeah.
And I think if you are willing to financially pay for that,
it
can work out quite well. But also you have to take into consideration, if you're not there for most of the day, you know, what kind of quality time are you getting with your dog as well? And it's a fine little balancing act.
It is. I mean, for me, having a dog, and certainly for me and my husband, having greyhounds is... it's better than any pill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of stress in this world. There's a lot of insecurity. There's a lot of worries. And it impacts on our health.
Yes.
To me, there is nothing more calming and more helpful than stroking your pet and your greyhound when you get home and seeing the love that is given back, oodles of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all pets give love. I can only talk from a point of view of our greyhounds. They come up, they cherish us. The look in their eyes when you come home is just, well, to die for. It really
is. It's everything, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And we've trained our dogs to be pets as therapy dogs.
Oh, amazing. So Mine as well.
Yeah. So we go into nursing homes, we go into dementia units, we go into cancer units.
Yeah.
The joy that these dogs bring to people who perhaps have had animals in the past and can't have them now, you can't bottle it.
No. You really can't. I mean, we don't do as many hospital visits with the Pomeranians, but we do university exam week, which is usually the most difficult period of a student's university career when they're having to do their exams. We also do reading with kids at school.
Yeah.
And culturally, in some of the areas that we go to, a lot of these children aren't used to living with dogs.
Yeah.
And to start off with, the first few weeks, they'll sit on the other side of the room, and then every week they'll get closer and closer and closer till they're sitting with a puppy in their lap, you know, and they're reading this book that they had no confidence with several weeks beforehand. But for some reason, having the dog there just changes everything for them. And there's studies about how it lowers your blood pressure, how it increases your health, how exposing even newborns to dog environments will boost their immune system.
Yeah.
So I'm all for everyone having dogs.
Do you know, it would be a far better world if we treated our animals with more care, certainly in certain areas, and we cherished what they can give to us.
Which is kind of leading on to what you were doing in London as well.
Yeah.
So you were at Parliament yesterday.
Yeah, we were actually at a committee that was discussing whether behaviourists and trainers should actually be registered, licensed, because obviously out there are a lot of people who aren't, and they're giving wrong advice and failing the actual dogs. But one of the reasons why Greyhound Trust Hall Green and we as dog owners ourselves was there was that we unfortunately had a greyhound attacked by a mastiff that was off lead, we believe being trained for security reasons, was mauled, and unfortunately the volunteer who was walking with the greyhound intervened, but the dog was attacked first.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up with broken fingers. The dog was very badly injured. But we did a fundraiser and we managed to raise over £8,000.
That's good.
So Dave, which is the greyhound's name. It is, yeah. Dave is moving on and we're helping him. But we wanted to introduce, or we're looking to introduce, a thing called Dave's Law.
Okay.
This is because at this present moment in time, there is a law, Finn's Law, that was brought in that protects dogs that are used in service or are used for people who need them, like blind dogs, etc., from that point of view. But the law states that if dog-on-dog attacks happen, at the moment, there is no comeback for the owner whose dog is attacked. So what we want to do is change that. Dave was on a lead, he was muzzled, and he was being walked by a volunteer. He got attacked by a mastiff who was off lead, should never have been in that position. And basically, the law states there's nothing we can do because the volunteer was not attacked first. And we don't think that's right. And what's worrying is that there are more and more dog attacks happening.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that I get very annoyed about is if my dogs are on a lead, they're on a lead for a reason.
Absolutely.
So if another dog approaches who's off the lead, it's very well the owner shouting, oh, don't worry, he's friendly.
He's friendly, yes.
But do you know, my dog might not be.
Yeah,
And
100%.
So I want the respect out there. I want people to realise that, you know, if a dog is on a lead, then put your dog on a lead.
Mm-hmm.
And if a dog does attack a dog on a lead, then there should be some comeback for the person whose dog has been attacked.
I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just going to stipulate that this is in the UK only.
Yes.
At the end of the day, we are responsible for our dog's behaviour, or we should be responsible for our dog's behaviour. And if I understand sometimes accidents do happen, but most of the time with dog-on-dog attacks, the owner's known that there's a history there and they're still being irresponsible and allowing their dog off lead. And there should be some consequences to that.
I think at the end of the day, it's all about responsibility. I don't want to see, the UK in a situation where every dog has to be muzzled, every dog has to be on a lead. But there has to be consequences if your dog does attack another dog.
Mm-hmm.
And at this present moment in time, unfortunately, certainly from a lot of emails that we've received, it seems to be a laughable thing.
Yeah.
You know, they walk off with their dog. This dog is left bleeding in a puddle.
Absolutely.
And they just go off and there's no consequences. We actually had a lady email us who said her dog was attacked by a neighbour's dog. They obviously that you know there was consequences to that, but she couldn't prosecute because it was a dog on dog attack. The dog had got in and attacked her dog. She ended up remortgaging her house for £12,000 worth of vet's fees to get this dog, and nothing could be done.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is wrong. At the end of the 100%. Day, you know, it's responsible ownership, and it, you know, there are. We're talking about a minority here, right? It's not the majority, but there has to be a comeback. There has to be something. And I'm not blaming the dog.
No.
At the end of the day, a dog is a dog is a dog.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got a dog that you know might react to another dog, then you've got to take the responsibility of, you know, if you want to run that dog, find an area where you can securely do it, where there's no other dogs yep. around, and don't put other dogs at risk and other people.
Yep.
It could have been a child.
Yeah, that's so, so true. And it's something that's so important. And
absolutely.
I've lived in other countries where dogs aren't allowed off lead. And that, for me, is very sad. And it causes so many other behavioural issues.
Yeah.
But I feel in the UK, we're very lucky and very privileged in some senses that we can do all these things with our dogs. And it just takes a few people to spoil the fun for everyone else. And it becomes very expensive. That particular dog that's been attacked has to go through surgeries, potentially yeah. risks for the rest of its life, behavioural issues. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier. Some pet insurance companies will not even cover that.
No.
Or they will say, there's a lot of clauses where they can get out of various things. You know, some of them are fantastic, but most of the cheaper ones I found have, oh, well, your dog was on lead, therefore we're not going to cover this. Oh, we'll cover it for the first year. And I was like, well, what if the dog is now reacting for several years afterwards? Or what if arthritis sets in after it's had its hip operation? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we do need to be more cautious, I think, as pet owners, as to what our dog's behaviour is like. Because we know, we live with that animal all the time. And if our dog has a history of attacking, we need to be careful of other dogs around us. Mm. You know, we wouldn't allow a crazy person to just run around all over the place with a knife.
Yeah, it's a bit worrying. Although it is at this moment in time with the world.
There are consequences to that.
Absolutely.
Well, in theory, there are consequences
there sure
to that.
Are.
And at the end of the day, as much as we love our dogs, they are animals. And they have the potential to hurt either us or another
yeah.
dog. So there should be some kind of law in place, which is obviously what you're trying to get.
We're just trying to make the it's a level playing field
yeah.
where, you know, you have to think twice about, you know, taking a dog out
mm-hmm.
in a position where you know that that dog possibly could cause problems. I mean, there are a lot of breeds out there that are becoming status symbols.
Mm.
That you know, there are dogs out there that are amazing dogs that are put in a sad situation by the owner. They, you know, their breeding is fine, but their training isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find that a lot of the Dangerous Dog Act and the named dogs that they actually register, you know, they're beautiful breeds,
yeah.
but if you train them in the wrong way, then they don't stand a chance.
Yeah.
The problem for us is that, you know, you've got to distinguish that at the end of the day, if a dog attacks another dog, it's attacking for a reason. And sometimes it's been taught to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in the case of the Mastiffs that attacked our dog, they were definitely being trained for that reason. And of course, when you've got that situation and that situation where they're not in a secure area,
mm-hmm.
it could have been a child. In
mm-hmm.
fact, we had a young lady, a little girl, walking with us, and it was only by the grace of God she was behind
mm-hmm.
walking another dog. If it had been her, I dread to think
mm-hmm.
what we would have been dealing with. So I'm after Dave's law to protect all dog owners.
Absolutely.
All dog owners.
No matter the size, no matter the breed, because, you know, we want to just make sure that everyone's aware we're not stereotyping
yeah.
Mastiffs or anything
life,
like that.
Life, you know.
And I've worked with pit bulls and they're amazing.
They're beautiful
the
dogs.
The only dogs that have ever attacked me, Basset Hound and a Yorkshire Terrier.
The small ones can get you.
As the owner of four small dogs, I know they can be a bit feisty.
Do you know, look, greyhounds, you know, that they are traced to, that they are taught to chase.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, we've got dogs, greyhounds that are reactive. We've got greyhounds that are not reactive.
Yeah.
We've got greyhounds living with cats and rabbits.
Yep.
We've got greyhounds who hate the sight of them.
Yes.
It's all about giving them time. It's giving them pleasure. It's
mm-hmm.
giving them the opportunity to be dogs.
Yeah.
And to show them what we want of them.
Mm-hmm.
They dogs are not stupid. They have got a brain. They do want to learn. And so taking on a greyhound from our perspective, looking at it from that point of view, is a fantastic way of giving this dog a change of life,
yep.
A different opportunity. And certainly from an inner city point of view, taking them to work or working
yes.
with them, that is a big advocate for me because
yeah.
they make such a difference to people.
They really do.
And it's actually been proved, I'm sure you know, that actually productivity in people increases when they've got their animals at work with them, because for 5 minutes they can have a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and the dogs love it because they're just lying there enjoying it.
My dogs, as I mentioned, they're therapy dogs, and they do corporate visits as well. So every now and then, you know, a company will be like, oh, let's have some dogs in for an hour at lunchtime, you know, just to boost morale or something. Yeah. And nearly all the time after I've been there for the hour, I get an email from the CEO or the board of directors. They're like, that was the most productive afternoon anyone's ever had, because they've been able to let go of that stress and they've smiled and they've had a good time for an hour. But just going back to what you were saying about greyhounds in particular, and some of them being great with kids, not great with small dogs, great with rabbits, etc. That goes for every breed, you know. And what you do as a charity, which I think is fantastic, is you assess each dog as they come in as an individual.
Absolutely. I mean, what happens with Greyhound Trust All Green and all the branches across the country, I mean, there's 50 plus branches for the Greyhound Trust. What we do is we work with the trainers and the owners. So once the greyhound has been retired, for whatever reason, it's done enough races or it has had an injury, we actually bring the dog into our branch. And then it's our responsibility as volunteers. We're not paid. We do this. Greyhound Trust All Green is not paid. We do this because we want to find out about the dog. We want to know the personality of the dog so that we can then assess whether that dog is good with other dogs, small dogs, good with children, not good with children, will cope with being on its own for four or 5 hours, will not cope. So they come in, they are neutered. The reason why we neuter greyhounds when they come in is because we don't want them to be bred from. Greyhounds are a pure breed, so when they're raised, they're a pure bred. You can follow their lineage.
Oh, wow.
So the idea is that we prevent those dogs from being stolen, from being used in for other reasons. And so they're neutered. From then on, they stay in our branch. We've got two branches, one in Starbridge and one in Lichfield near Sutton Park. And we take them off-site. We take them into various different places. We take them home.
Yeah.
We start to assess what their characters are because, you know, they have got characters.
They're every so single, goofy as well, aren't they?
Oh, they're crazy. Crazy dogs. We've got one called Teddy, ours, who's a complete nutter with squeaky toys. So, you know, loves everything about squeaks. And then we have people who come along and say, you know, we're interested in having a greyhound. We then work with them.
Yep.
We don't just hand them a greyhound and then go, there you are.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the case with the branches of the Greyhound Trust. We work with the families. We work with the individuals and say, right, take your time.
Yeah.
Don't just pick the dog for the colour.
Oh, gosh,
A lot of greyhounds are black.
Yeah.
The first gene of the greyhound is black. So an awful lot of greyhounds are black. And there's a big stigma across the whole of the rescue side of that people don't want black cats, black greyhounds.
I have a black dog.
Absolutely.
Least adoptable dogs in rescues. Even though she's a Pomeranian.
Yeah, no, it's the colour. It always is. And so what we try and do is they come in with expectations. We want this colour, we want that, blah, 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 blah. And we say, forget that. Stand back. Come and meet the dogs. Meet the personality.
Exactly.
And they get introduced to various different greyhounds, both bitches and both dogs. And it's surprising how they come in with one idea and they adopt a completely different dog to what they went in with. So we work with them.
Yeah.
It's not about just hand them over a dog and say, there you go. It has to be the right fit. Sometimes we don't get it right, you know, and sometimes the expectations of the people who are adopting isn't what they thought a dog ownership was. So, you know, that's okay. But what we don't want is putting a person in a situation where they don't feel there's a get-out clause.
Absolutely.
But neither do we want a situation where we're putting a dog into the wrong position.
100% agree. You know, when I adopted Chaplin, it's actually his 3-year anniversary of me having him. He was a foster fail. And initially, the rescue knew that I had Pomeranians. And like all sight hounds, they have that reputation of chasing anything small and fluffy. And Chaplin's obviously a broken Saluki because he has no prey drive whatsoever. He's like, oh, there's a squirrel. Oh, there's a rabbit. Oh, that's Pomeranians running around. That's great. But we've fostered other Salukis that just aren't good in that situation. Yeah. And the rescues were so fantastic in saying, right, this is going to work for you and this isn't going to work for you. And that's something that you guys do as well, which is so important. And people do need to remove those stereotypes about what they want.
They do. You know, it's very difficult for you. You can't pre-produce your children, not yet anyway. you know, you can't say, well, I want, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed, blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe not yet. The same with a dog. My attitude is, and certainly the branch's attitude is, come in with an open mind.
Yes.
Get to know the breed. Get to know the personality. There is no one greyhound the same. Each one has got its own quirks. Mm-hmm. Each one's got its own different manners and styles, you know. Look into the eyes.
Yeah.
You know, the soul of a dog, the soul of a greyhound, you just have to look into the eyes.
Absolutely.
And they'll melt your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about. It's about fitting that greyhound in to your life.
Yes.
And making sure that greyhound also likes what you want from it. And it's a teamwork. It's a teamwork as a branch. It's a teamwork as a charity. It's a teamwork with the breed, the trainers, mm-hmm. etc., to ensure that as many greyhounds as possible can get homes. There are over 8,000 greyhounds, I believe, across the country getting retired. And there is an awful lot of greyhounds that need homes, certainly across the branches of the Greyhound Trust.
Mm-hmm.
So really the job of us as a charity is to kind of open people's perspectives and say, you know, rather than going and buying a dog for £600 as a puppy,
mm-hmm.
why not look at the rescue side of things, whether it be a greyhound or not?
Yes.
You know, for an adoption fee, you have got a beautiful dog, certainly mm-hmm. from a greyhound's perspective, because the racing greyhounds have got their breeding behind them. You can look at the breeding.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a quality dog that is loving, caring, mm-hmm. gentle, doesn't need a lot of walking.
And they're quite young as well, generally, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of the greyhounds retire around about three.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if they're exceptional racing, then they'll go probably to five.
Right. So it's not like you're getting an 18-year-old dog that's, you know, sadly going to pass away soon. You've got a youngster.
You know, there's no sell-by date on any dog.
True.
So, you know, you can't say whether that dog's going to live for 6 months or 16 years.
Yeah.
We don't know. What we can do is say, forever, however long you have that mm-hmm. dog, then you can only get that love and they can give love. Certainly from a lifestyle point of view, greyhounds usually live to I would say, averagely between 12 and 14 years of age. We've got one called Judy, who's mm-hmm. 13.
Oh, my gosh.
She's a bit wonky on her legs now. But she's still doing okay, and we've adapted a wheelchair for her.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
Yeah, she still comes on walks with us.
My oldest dog, Houdini, who a lot of you've heard me talk about, he was a Shih Tzu,
yes.
who had to be put to sleep last year, but he was 18.
Whoa!
Yeah,
whoa.
It was insane. This dog just never wanted to die. He just lived forever.
You know, it's
so, you know, they can keep going. They can keep going for a long time. But yeah, a lot of people will say, oh, I'm not sure about this, or the procedure for rescuing is too difficult. The reason for that, guys, and whether it's a greyhound or any other rescue, they want to get it right. They want you to have the right dog for your lifestyle, and they don't want the dog to be pushed from pillar to post all the time.
Yeah.
They want to try and get it as right as possible. That's why the home checks are important. That's why having an interview with you, making sure they go through all the questions, etc., is something that is important. And yes, it can take a little bit of time sometimes, but you're not talking years here. Most a month, generally.
I think from our perspective, we much prefer the person who's taken the time to look at the breed.
Yes.
To actually say, you know, I want to come and to walk the dog.
Mm-hmm.
I want to find out a little bit more, rather than the one who says, you know, I fancy your dog, we'll come and have this one. You know, that isn't wrong, but a lot of failings can be because they haven't looked into what ownership of a dog is.
Yeah.
It is a responsibility. The problem with, I suppose, the side of owning a dog is that they feel that, well, if it doesn't work, we just give it back.
Mm.
You know, that's not what this is about. It's actually putting a label on that dog. Immediately it comes back into a rescue centre or it comes into our branch. You have to say to the next adopter that this dog has been home, but it's come back. Immediately, that's a negative.
Absolutely.
Now, it could be that it's just not right for the people, but it is a negative on the dog's side, whether it's the dog's fault or not.
Yeah.
So all I ask of people when they do go in a dog, any dog, mm-hmm. greyhound or not, is think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Please ensure that when you're going to take on a pet, that you know what the expectations are, and you're willing to work and train These dogs, greyhounds love to learn.
Yeah.
They are not stupid dogs. They like activities. They like hide and seek. They love to find the cheese. You know, preferably,
sounds like
out,
a fun game.
Preferably out in the garden rather than in the house, you know?
Not on the counter, cheese.
Not on the counter, no, no. But, you know, there's lots of things out there for interactivity. You know, there in America, greyhounds actually do agility.
Yeah.
You know, which a lot of people go, no.
Yeah.
And they do.
Mm-hmm.
They actually are training them for agility. I mean, can you imagine them flying up and down with a chase?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, flyball as well.
Yeah.
You know, some of the champions flyball.
Well, they're
dogs.
Starting with whippets, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're using the whippets more.
Smart.
I mean, it's pointless watching them because they're there and back before you know it.
They have to do it in slow motion.
Slow motion just to see it. Yeah. Can you imagine that with a greyhound? 4-6 races, got the ball and back again.
They'd have to double the length.
Double the length. Yeah.
Just so you can see a tail.
Absolutely, yeah. Just watch that.
So just remind everyone else what you guys are doing at the National Pet Show this weekend.
Yeah, at the National Pet Show, we're representing the Greyhound Trust, which has its offices down south, with 50 branches across the country.
Wow.
So what we're doing as Greyhound Trust Hall Green is we're introducing the breed to the public.
Amazing.
We're saying to them, come and stroke the greyhounds. They're not wiry. They're not this. They're not that. Come and find out about the breed. Ask us as many questions as you want to about owning a greyhound.
Brilliant.
And see if they are the right dog for you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Right. So anyone that's interested in greyhounds, and there's a few other rescue groups going to be there as well at the National Pet Show this weekend at Birmingham
NEC.
There you go. We're going to be there as well at the Hound Hangout, so come and see us on Saturday. You can meet the Pomeranians. But yeah, if you have any questions about greyhounds or rescuing in general, definitely go and say hi to the gang.
Yeah.
And how many dogs are you going to be taking?
Oh my goodness, there's going to be quite a few.
Oh, I can't wait.
We're going to be in and out. So yeah, we'll come over and see you. So there's quite a few. We're bringing some homeless hounds with us on the Saturday.
Amazing.
And there's going to be some homed hounds as well. So the idea is that people can interact with both the homeless side and the homed hounds to see the difference, really.
Absolutely.
I mean, homeless hounds won't sit. They won't lie. They won't rest. Whereas, well, my greyhounds or our greyhounds, we can't even get them to stand up. So
there's a great Facebook group called Sight Hounds on Sofas.
There is.
Which
there
tells
is.
You everything you need to know about greyhounds,
absolutely.
Basically.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a big thanks to Fitzmedia and for the people who are putting it on, because it's an opportunity for people to talk more about animals and pets and find out more before perhaps taking one on.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank
really
you so much, Kimberly, for having me.
Going to see you on Saturday.
Absolutely.
Cheers.